Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I'm thinking of things that I just can't abide, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Christopher Speller. Luke Aaron Moore's here.
All right.
Jim Campbell's here.
Edward.
And Pete Diggory Donaldson's here.
Edward.
Remember your middle name,
no,
Jim.
No, you don't.
It's so odd. This is on throat.
You've gone already.
Edward.
Jedward Campbell.
Yep.
How can we forget?
Been best mates for 30 years.
Jeez.
Oh, dear. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time again where we meet each other and talk about Manchester United.
Yeah.
Oh, dearie me.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It was last week, was it, when we were saying, oh, I think we're, have we been harsh on Mourinho?
And we were talking about the late title search.
Put it in perspective, I spent a good hour or so yesterday trying to find Man United fans on Twitter who were trying to put a brave face on it.
Yeah.
I didn't find many.
Most of them
have gone to ground, Pete.
I had to watch that for work. What a dreadful football. Yeah. People dragging their shots all over the place. I know it was a bit rainy, but I mean, it's Manchester, and if it rains.
And if there's one thing, it was really rainy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When they crossed over to, was it Andy Hinchcliffe outside the Etihad? Mm. You could hardly hear him. The rain was pounding on the umbrella.
Mourinho was had a pen out when, just as West Brom scored their goal, Mourinho got his pen out. I thought, I hope that's one of those Fisher Space pens that can write underwater, upside down.
Presumably Mourinho was saying on this piece of, well, I wasn't saying anything, he was writing on this piece of paper, why hasn't Lukaku scored against his old team in a crunch game? It's a trope.
West Brom do the job over Man United, don't they? I mean, they are, I did sort of hurriedly look at the table and think, no way can West Brom stay up, and I don't think they can. which makes
they're
it all the funnier,
really.
Well, I just they get rid of Pardew, and then they get a draw and then a win at Old Trafford. I mean, what on earth did they not do this a few weeks or a few games previously?
Did you see? I've actually misplaced the tweet, but someone tweeted us saying, have you seen this quote from one of the players? It might have been James McLean, who said, and I'm paraphrasing it because I can't find the actual quote. It's something like, yeah, it's really nice because now we actually know what we're doing.
Yeah. They all talked up Darren Moore a lot, didn't they?
He's a lovely fellow, Darren Moore.
Yeah, but more than that, he was actually really clear in his instructions and was just, you know, he got them all sort of on the same page. And I think Ben Foster was saying as well that it pretty much echoed the sentiment of James McLean. It's like, yeah, we've got more of an idea what we're doing now. It's a bit late, but, you know. Yeah,
which just makes the whole thing so shambolic that Pardew was a dead man walking for many, many months. And
one win in total in the league.
Exactly, yeah. I think that the last time they got a point under Pardew was on the 20th of January.
Points under Pardew. That's his new job. It's a game show.
Yeah, we only need one hand to do that. But it just seems ridiculous. And all the players are coming out. How on earth did... Well, the board got sacked, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, how on earth nobody thought to do this anyway?
Do you know...
It's not the big story.
Was it... In the Sky graphics where they use Darren Moore's face, and he's like dressed in like sort of managerial clothes.
It was a suit, wasn't he?
It was a suit. Like,
he looked very proud.
Had they superimposed his head on someone else's body?
Possibly.
Or has he just got no neck? I'm confused.
Yeah, it might well be. Yeah.
When I was at Sky, Marcus, you might remember this. When I worked at Sky, there was a call for certain people to go and have their... themselves filmed,
right? Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then they could to do the walk. Remember they used to the walk towards camera bit. Yeah, Sky Sports.
I remember they released the Pardew green screen footage and just everybody used that for a couple of seasons.
That's right.
For humorous.
But I think for at least a period of time they weren't using the actual players' bodies.
Yeah.
The same way they don't use
that, right?
The same way they don't use football players for the cutaway shots in football adverts and stuff.
Yeah, because I used to play with the Francesco Totti stunt double.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Had the hair and everything. He was magnificent.
But before I forget, I was just going to say about Darren Moore that his nickname when he played at Portsmouth was Bovril. Because as soon as he got the ball at the back, everyone was literally like, get your hand on your Bovril because this is coming in the stand.
I think you mentioned that before. That's a lovely one.
I wanted to talk of the terrace with him and he was a very sweet man.
He's lovely, isn't he? He always comes
across as lovely. As were the band Reef.
Oh, yeah.
All us Moors are lovely, Pete.
Yeah, I'd say so. But it's a great win for West Brom. And yes, they're odds on to go down. Of course, that doesn't really change. But a win at Old Trafford, no matter what your situation, is never boring.
Marcus, I almost feel like West Brom aren't the real story in this result.
They got a 5-5 against United once.
Alex Ferguson's last game.
A Lukaku hat-trick.
They've got points recently at Old Trafford, lest we forget. Maybe it isn't a big deal for West Brom fans. Is the big story J. Rodriguez suddenly coming into form and giving Gareth Southgate a headache?
Yeah, giving Marcus, him something to think about.
The only person giving Gareth Southgate a headache is you, repeatedly. But, Marcus, I think you're right.
We're talking about Newcastle a bit, ladies and gentlemen.
Just try to do the maths with the aviation fuel. Yeah. We haven't got enough.
Yeah.
We haven't got enough fuel to lift this off the ground.
Marcus.
Can't even fill the tank.
There's a player in it.
He's dead from fuel inhalation.
Why is Scott Parker in here? He doesn't even...
I think you're right, though, by the way, on the West Brom thing. I think they've gone through the type of season they've had. I think they've all been very, very calm and happy because they thought, you know what, we're playing that Man United at Old Trafford in April. Yeah. That's a win.
That's a gimme.
Yeah, that's definitely 3 points. Yeah.
Did anyone realise Ben Foster was 35?
No, I didn't.
No,
what a save, he made.
What a save it was. Another great clean sheet at Old Trafford for him. Yeah. His former Stamford Ground.
He didn't get any as a player for United.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, he might have done.
Yeah. So there we are. But yes, Manchester United, they've handed Manchester City the title.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, last week it looked like Jose Mourinho had finally at least got, you know, taken some of the shine off of City's win and his personal battle with Pep Guardiola, which they might deny, but we all know is there. And he's just completely ballsed it up. Like he's put the shine back on.
Was it him that, I mean, he's picked a decent side.
Well, I mean
he said, you know, he could smell a bad performance coming and suggested that his players
get some air freshener.
Maybe. Yeah. He said let the players let their win against Manchester City go to their heads.
He also said they were way too complicated in everything they did. And it wasn't simple enough. And he said, I believe in myself, but I don't play.
Yeah.
But I mean...
But that gives the coach...
Yeah.
But that gives you an insight into Mourinho because...
Well, he might put himself on.
That he may well do. Well, we saw him in that charity game that he's quite a handy goalkeeper. But
no, he isn't, Marcus. I don't know why you keep saying this.
Peter, your argument would be that's the last position they need to worry
about. You're in the pocket of Big Jose.
Yeah, Marcus, Pete actually fancied himself as a keeper as well. He always wanted us to go and goal. And that's hurt him there.
Yeah that has... I think with Mourinho...
The weekend didn't let any in. So.
Did you really? I knew you'd go. You always go and goal when
clean
you play.
Clean Pete.
Well done. Clean Pete.
And have a clean Pete under your belt.
When he says, I believe in myself, but I don't play. That, you know, a few journalists, I think Jonathan Wilson certainly says, that, you know, that the press conference after the game and the chat before the game, that's when Mourinho is trying to influence everything. And he hasn't been
well,
a professional.
Well, he can't because he literally handed them the title.
No, sure, but that's almost him playing, if you see what I mean.
Oh, and I won the press conference.
He regularly wins that.
Yeah.
But... It is a damning result for Manchester United because after the confidence they got from Manchester City, the win there, and then reportedly that they were playing their music really loud in the dressing room all that kind of stuff, and then suddenly this happens. It just torpedoes what happened at the Etihad. It's ridiculous.
It really does. But again, it's kind of Shakespearean, isn't it? Like it looked for a long time because City were leading by so many points that we weren't going to get the kind of Jose Pep ding-dong that we'd been hoping for. But it's all kind of happened at the end in a very, very, very weird way.
In a different kind of way. Yeah.
What did you think of Mourinho, the way he was when he was chatting after? I mean, we've mentioned a few comments and quotes there. But he was slightly... he wasn't particularly prickly as we've seen him before.
He was sopping wet.
Fed up, didn't he? Just looked like he just wanted to get out of the press conference. It was like, of it, and we all know what's happened. There's not really much to say. He kept saying no dramas. Love that.
There's nothing, no dramas?
There's nothing he can say, really. And it, to be balanced about it for a second, he did stop, I think it was Patrick Davison of Sky Sport, he did stop in by saying, look, Man City haven't won the title because we lost at home to West Brom. They won the title because they've got this amount of points.
And they were the best.
And it would be disrespectful for us to say that. So if it happened the other way around, I wouldn't like that, which is absolutely fair. Mm. But the problem is when you see this type of thing, you know, you want Man United. West Brom are relegated anyway, and it's a great story for them to win at Old Trafford, of course. But if Man United win, they keep the title race a little bit alive. You know, there's still something to talk about and all the rest of it. But it's so underwhelming when that type of result happens, not only because of the game itself, but because, you know, it's never great. And we've been doing this show for years and years and seen many Premier League teams be crowned. It's not great when they're not doing it on the pitch. It feels so underwhelming.
Well, bearing in mind that if Man City weren't as good as they are, that team that lost to West Brom would have won the title. It was second.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Like, the second best team.
In that manner.
It kind of goes back to what we were saying last week, though. Because this is a step forward for Man United. It doesn't look like one because of, you know, the City have finished so far above them and also the manner in which it's happened has been a bit meek. But they've already got 71 points, which is more than they've had even at the end of a season in the post-Ferguson era. Mm-hmm. So much depends now on whether Jose's third season syndrome happens again and it all
falls
apart.
So they've improved as well.
They have improved, yeah. So, I mean, but the thing is, the danger with Man United that everyone was worried about, Man United fans, well, exclusively, I suppose, was that they would just continue to slide and become another club in the pack rather than, you know, the jewel in the crown of the Premier League. And this puts them closer to being competitive again, you would think.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to say. And the game itself, West Brom, it wasn't a smash-and-grab job. They had chances and from the outset they had chances. Do you think though, we talk about Mourinho deflecting attention away from players onto himself, which players sometimes like when they're playing under him because he takes the spotlight off them a bit so players can kind of be just get on with their duties and whatnot. But we've just talked about Mourinho there in the context of this West Brom game. He's picked a good side. He picked a side that won at Etihad last week. We haven't singled out any players for not scoring or not doing their defensive jobs and so on and so forth.
Or Matic, for example.
Do you think that Mourinho kind of, all right, I'll take it all upon me, it backfires in moments like this, which is why he sometimes then has to almost dig out his own players. And at times like this, he almost has to say, well, hang on, you're putting the focus on me. Well, actually, some of my players, and sometimes we think, oh, blimey, Mourinho, you shouldn't dig out your players. But then I suppose from his point of view, his tactics backfire slightly in that sense.
I get the feeling that a proper coachy manager who comes in after Jose Mourinho is going to inherit a hell of a squad.
Yeah.
Because just can't seem to get the best out of his footballers. And he can complain about all he wants. But fundamentally, yeah, they're not delivering on the pitch. They are playing within themselves. They are overcomplicating things. It's your job to sort it out, though.
Do you think, as has happened a few times or a couple of times at least in recent history, do you think if Mourinho leaves, then it's Rafa's turn to come in and clean it up?
How dare you?
No, all right, okay. Not today. It's been very effusive on WhatsApp about Rafa this weekend.
That's
true. We must talk about Manchester City. They put Tottenham to the sword at Wembley.
And we needed to see Vincent Kompany, Big Vinny, in a pub. Celebrate it, because we didn't get the moment, and I feel very passionately about this, that I want to see a team experience that moment when they've won the league on the pitch, because, you know, it's
like a cup final.
When they sink to their knees and celebrate, and then the trophy comes out and they'll parade it around.
Well, especially after such a, you know, it's been such a good team and such a sort of impressive style in which they've won it, and then, you know, you just, it's a picture of Vincent Kompany in a pub, which is brilliant, and we're all for.
I think Stones might have been in there.
I think
as well.
He was,
in the foreground.
Is that right?
The only time that's been good, and obviously I'm slightly biased here, is when Chelsea beat Spurs to give Leicester the title, because Jamie Vardy was literally having a party.
Yeah,
and it was fun. It was a lot of weird narrative there, but generally,
but we just wanted Leicester to get over the
absolutely
line.
Yeah, slightly
different. Thinking about it, John Stones might have been in that pub for about 2 months.
I was going to say he didn't know that they'd won the league.
Yeah.
No, it was amazing. And I think
spilling every fourth
they
pint.
Did it in emphatic fashion, because Spurs are a very good side, as we know. But my goodness, Manchester City made them look second
they
best.
They did. They really did. It was impressive.
They were by far the best team on the day and throughout the season. And I think we have to recalibrate a little bit, because the manner in which City have gone out of the Champions League and been beaten, having been 2 goals ahead against United 3-2, we talked about it on this show, Marcus. I think you said, look, it's in danger of the season petering out a little bit. Now, of course, that sounds ridiculous when you realise they're 16 points clear ahead of the Premier League, but we're so used to that.
Yeah.
That we're so used to them steamrolling everything, and we've talked in the context of how many trophies are they, not are they going to win the Premier League, because that's patently ridiculous, because they obviously are. We've been talking in terms like, how many trophies are they going to win?
Yes.
Is this the greatest Premier League team ever? And Hinchcliffe, just to go back to him on Sky Sports at the weekend, now I understand there's probably a bit of bias there. He said this City team would beat the best Man United team of the 90s, which I think is a big shout at this stage.
I agree.
But of course, they are a fantastic team, by far and away the best team in the Premier League, and they're going to get better next season. I said earlier this season that, you know, one thing that Guardiola has done as well is he seems to have lowered the sort of average age of the squad as well. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing serious to suggest they're not going to be better next season. So even if what we're talking about in terms of a post-Mourinho Man United, which probably won't come next season, although it might, they've still got a lot to do. They've got 16 points to make up already. Mm-hmm. And if you know what it's like when a team gets a Premier League title under their belt, the confidence that brings, the quality they've got, it's going to be very, very hard for any team to deal with them.
We've spoken so many times about how difficult it is to retain the Premier League and leagues in general, but Guardiola's made a habit of that, hasn't he? As you say, with him lowering the average age of the squad, and also Benjamin Mendy to come back as well, which is amazing.
I quite like the role he's fulfilling at the moment.
I love it. Social media chief executive, but he can do both, I'm sure.
Yeah,
he did say that on Twitter. He said, oh, I'm back in training now, I'll be back in a few weeks or whatever, but don't worry, I'll still be tweeting.
And then he did hashtag shuffling.
Hashtag Shark Team.
I love Shark Team so much. But yeah, generally though, Guardiola does build for that, doesn't he? He plans for teams that, you know, they go through phases that are perhaps three seasons rather than one. And this is exactly why he's bringing that age down. It'd be interesting to see if he can do that in the Premier League, because we've seen before that it's so difficult.
Well, the inertia that creeps in almost subconsciously is very tough.
Yeah, but he seems sort of, you know, well, he's made more ready for that than
he's
anyone.
He's made a managerial career out of winning titles. So.
What I find interesting, what Pep Guardiola does is that at the start of the season, for the first, I don't know, 12 to 15 games, whatever it was, Raheem Sterling was one of their crucial players, scoring a lot of goals, making a lot of assists. And then he was taken out of the team for a little bit.
Bernardo Silva didn't get much of a chance at the start of the season. Now he's a reasonably regular feature in the side. A player like David Silva has been there throughout, and obviously Kevin De Bruyne. But there are a few players which Guardiola will say, right, you're kind of one of our main players, and then take them out for a bit. Yeah. And I think that kind of may well stop inertia, because that player, obviously they'll get a rest, so they'll get the benefits of that, but they will be taken out, and that player will be thinking, I want to get back in there. And they'll see what a great time everybody's...
It happened with Bernardo Silva as well, of course.
Exactly, yeah.
He started out the team, came in for a good period.
And so I think, you know, they see what's happening on the pitch and they think, well, I want to bloody well get back in there. That looks like a lovely old time, you know. And the spirit that Guardiola has fostered at that club, you know, players... This is the thing about Guardiola. Players will look at that and go, I'd love to play for him. Yes, Manchester City, huge club. They play big wages, pay big wages, and the infrastructure's there and so on. But say at Manchester United, I think players would probably think, I'd like to play at Manchester United. It's a great club. Whereas at Manchester City at the moment, that will come to pass soon enough. But it's about Guardiola. Mm.
That rotation is also a very smart thing in terms of the pressure that's external. You know, if Paul Pogba gets dropped, it's a massive story. There's no one in the City team like that, because Guardiola is so open about this policy.
Yes.
And the result they had at Wembley at the weekend was really, really positive. Obviously, it's a great win for them. The last time Spurs lost in the league was, I think, in the middle of December. Yeah. And that was against Man City. Mm. So, clearly, to go there to that home ground that they've made their own, Spurs, and to beat them quite handily, really. I mean, there was that one... decision, wasn't there, when City were one up and the penalty was given, which looked like it might have been just outside the area, and that kills you, because three or four minutes after they've already scored, you go 2-0. That was a brilliant penalty, by the way, off the post.
Yeah. They were hard done by there.
Yeah, that was probably a little bit harsh, but other than that, City were the best team and on the day, and so they richly deserved it. But you know, it's no disgrace for Spurs. They're going to be in top four again this season. They've had this transitional period going to an unfamiliar stadium. Still in the FA Cup. Uh-huh. Essentially got two home games if they win the semi.
Yeah.
So there still could be something for them to shout about coming the end of the season. But really, it's been all about Man City this year. And because, as I said earlier, last few weeks has been a little bit tepid by them, by their own standards. But we shouldn't forget that they've been, you know, far and away the best team in the league. I don't know the last time that a team won the Premier League by this amount of points. I don't know the last time it happened, but it's certainly not been for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking of teams still in the FA Cup, Southampton, they were beaten by Chelsea. And the folded arms of Mark Hughes spoke volumes when the third goal went in.
It's gutting for them.
It really is gutting, because...
Is that a sign that no one's getting a handshake?
They did.
I love them so much.
He did dish one out.
Oh, good.
He dished one out to Conte. Conte seems like the type of character who would do that properly, though. Mm. He's quite sort of tough.
Quickly,
and stern.
Firm handshake. Yeah. Handshake. Harmshake?
Firm harmshake.
Yeah.
hand firm shake.
I think that would, even if they'd have just got a point, you know, to kind of hold on there, but... That is so gutting, as you say. And you look at Southampton now, and they're on 28 points. I mean, Swansea City in front of them on 33. There's five games left. And Southampton, the remaining fixtures, Leicester away, Bournemouth at home, Everton away, Swansea away, Man City at home. I mean, it's not terrible, but there are one or two fixtures in there. You think, they're probably not going to pick up anything there. I mean, in some respects, much better from Southampton, certainly for the first hour. But when Chelsea turned it on, then the difference between the sides really, really showed. And it's no, in one sense, it's no disgrace losing to Chelsea, but when you're 2-0 up and you're desperately needing points and you...
It's the worst way worst way it can happen for you, because if you match Chelsea sort of blow for blow and you concede and lose 1-0 or whatever, that's not... It is bad, but it's not as bad as being two goals ahead. Because Southampton's problem across two managers this season has been their game management. I mean, they've not been able to react under the previous manager when teams have changed things up against them. And
well, that's what Mark Hughes said, didn't he?
Well, it's the case, it's been the case before Hughes came along. But a point I was just going to finish off on this Chelsea game was that if you're 2-0 up in the Premier League, okay, I understand Chelsea are a good team, but they've not been without their problems. Chelsea, you have to manage the game. You have to change how you're going to approach it. You have to be mature enough to understand you're now going to do a different job, and you have to do things properly. Look out when Chelsea went a goal ahead and they went 3-2 up in the game. Look how well they controlled the possession for the last three or four minutes. If you watch that back, they were just relentless into the corner, putting it back, winning the throw-in, all that kind of stuff. Southampton aren't able to manage the game in any way. I don't know why. I don't know why a new manager coming in hasn't changed that for them. But they showed really good stuff in parts against Arsenal as well and came away from that with nothing. So, of course, when they were coming into these two games, well, it's actually three games, because the West Ham game, you're thinking, you've got to get something there. And they were battered. Yeah. They were by far the worst team. They go and they look at the Arsenal-Chelsea game and go, well, we're not really expected to get anything out of these two games. What do we always say on this show? Don't have a terrible time of it and don't get hammered. Right, you go two up against Chelsea and lose 3-2. That's as bad as getting beaten 5-0.
Yeah, I mean, when the first Chelsea goal went in, and echoing what you said there, Mark, you said his side is poor when understanding what's required in the immediate minutes following a goal or when momentum changes. There was 5 minutes between Giroud's opening goal and then and Hazard's equaliser. Hazard was left alone, unmarked, in the box. He had time to have a touch and then put it in the roof of the net, and you think, that's what he's talking about there. Absolutely. You can't let a player like that.
Well, they're too passive, Southampton. We've said it about them all season. They can't set an agenda. You get the impression that football is happening to them rather than it being something that they are taking part in.
Still, nice to see Giroud having a good time, Jim.
Oh, God, I knew it could never last.
I think with the system they play, with Willian and Hazard just behind a striker, I think Giroud will clearly, based on what happened at the weekend, Giroud looks a better bet than Morata.
Well, Giroud's link-up play has always been superb. He does a lot of sort of little tricks and flicks, but they are always for a purpose, and they very often come off. He's a very, very underrated player, and I think you're right, with those players behind him.
It's really ironic you said that, because before he came on, Chelsea were doing a lot of flicks and tricks and stepovers that were a waste of time. And that's what, and it's part of the reason they ended up being two goals behind. They were so airy-fairy, it was unbelievable. And obviously, they got given a rocket, and they had that sort of almost a Liverpool in the Champions League final-esque 8 or 9 minutes where it's bang, bang, bang. And Southampton didn't know what happened to them. They couldn't deal with it at all. Mm. And they had no chance of getting back in the game after that.
Just before we go to a break, we've got to mention Mike Dean. Mm. Who should have sent off Alonso, Marcus Alonso. Yeah. And Matt Letizier was scathing in his assessment of Mike Dean. He posted, if he wasn't quite so arrogant, he'd probably be embarrassed about missing a tackle like this.
I think Letizier
has a bin for a heart.
Obviously, I enjoyed everything about that game, but and I was
no need to say that,
but
is
if,
there?
But I do think if you're employed by the approved broadcaster for the Premier League, you've got to be a bit careful. You can't. He also said on Twitter,
he did go a little bit too far.
He said, is there a worse referee in the country than Mike Dean? Mm. He's obviously so upset about it because he's Southampton through and through. We understand that. You've got. I mean, am I being out of order here to say you've got to have a bit of professionalism?
I think
about
you
it?
Do. And Mark Hughes said something about, well, no wonder he didn't specifically say English referees, but it was massively implied that, well, no wonder they're not going to the World Cup because there are going to be no English referees at the World Cup.
Well, that's not why, though. The reason that's not happening is because Mark Clattenburg's retired and early and gone to get money elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's why it's happening. Mark Clattenburg would be going to the World Cup.
But do you not think FIFA were thinking we could have an English. Hang on.
Yeah.
No, we're not having Mike Dean in.
No, they should take Dean. They should
Mike
take
Dean
him
at a World Cup.
No, I think they should. But,
possibly.
But FIFA will be upstaged.
Marcus,
but what?
Put him in the England squad.
Get him on that jet.
Free in training.
We've got our squad and we've brought our own referee. Yeah. He won't give us any decisions.
I mean, I think Mike Dean could finally make the World Cup into the global event it's always, threatened to be.
Now he's waiting for 48 teams. That's what he's waiting for. At the moment, the World Cup's not big enough for him.
Mike Dean's the exact PR boost the FIFA World Cup needs.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about Crystal Palace and Newcastle after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I better go to Cashpoint and get some money if I've got any money left.
Ah, Channel 4's Robbie.
Yeah.
Channel 4 now, Pete. The joke's on you, pal.
Joke's on Peter. Well, Peter, what jokes have you got? Because it's time for correspondence with you.
The joke's never on me. We've only actually got one email, listen, because all of the other emails have been covered, squared away by Jez McLean. Slagging off Alan Pardew.
Ah,
I had about
right.
three or four of them.
We got a lot to get through today, so
yeah,
that's all right.
Thank you, everyone who got in touch. Jamie Ferguson, just a quick one. I've recently caught up with all my podcasts, and I've been particularly bored at work, so I've delved into the archives of the
God, I hate
Ramble.
These ones. I hate these ones.
Yeah. while listening, do the James McLean stuff?
while listening to Ramble History, I've gone back to 2010. There have been some great views from yourselves on the beautiful game. Some examples include... Luke's claim that Adam Johnson is the future of England football. Awkward. Mark is saying that Maradona could become a world-class manager. Jim's...
I love that.
No. Yeah. World Cup manager. Yeah. I think I was right.
Yeah. Jim's... I mean, if you're at the World Cup, you're a world-class manager,
exactly.
Aren't you?
Yeah.
Mick
yeah.
McCarthy would agree with you.
Yeah. Jim's very brief infatuation with Maron Shamak. And Pete's constant barrage on the lack of managerial skills of Rafa Benitez as well at Liverpool. Hey, look, it was a long time ago. We've all grown.
Yeah.
We've all been Real Madrid manager for a season, so that's fine.
I've got that quite lightly. The only thing I've been accused of is not being able to successfully predict a man turning out to be a paedophile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've always said that was your shortcoming.
Yeah. I think we've all got off lightly there.
Yeah.
Which Shamak, I think Shamak. I mean, return of Shamak and his hair and all that kind of stuff.
He started very well. Yeah. I mean, for about six games, he was very good for Arsenal.
And you'd have him at centre back now.
speaking of sexy men,
he's not that sexy.
No,
Nemanja
Vidic. He's an underrated sexy man.
Specimen.
He got the bit of the old blue steel, didn't he?
Yeah. Beautiful eyes and Thierry's hair beard oil.
Yeah, that was
sparkly, wasn't it?
My wife called me into the living room and said, "Have you seen this? Is this a thing now?
Why don't you use it?"
Yeah.
Would you get involved in that, Luke?
He's probably got diamonds in his beard because he's the greatest human being to ever live.
Yeah.
I would. How much hair do you reckon he's got now? Because he bicks the fuck out of that.
On his head?
Yeah, on his head.
Oh, it's heavily receding, definitely.
No, but I'd like to see him try and grow it out.
I've never seen him with hair, I don't think.
Oh, it's been a while.
I mean, I think his hair was receding in his playing career.
Did he have hair in 1998? I don't think he did he?
I think he might have done then, but even then it was very short.
But just like Thierry Henry, he made a decision really early.
Yeah,
he always makes a decision, curled in the top right-hand corner, where's my hair gone? Who knows?
But he's got a very nicely shaped head, and that's why it looks well. That's good.
I think when we all grow old, though, we'd like a good head of hair like Roy Hodgson.
Yes, very much. Good link, Marcus. Well done, mate. Yeah.
Thanks.
If you want to get in touch with the show, shortthefootballramble.com. I mean,
if you want to get in touch with the Marcus Speller, Roy Hodgson loving, the whole show's been building up to this moment, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What a win. Mm. What a flipping win for Crystal Palace. A huge win, and Wilfred Zaha showed his importance once again. Mm. Now, I like this because Palace, they went at them in the early stages, and really, that ultimately won them the game, those early goals. I mean, obviously, Brighton did peg them back, but that's what was really the difference. And a few Brighton missed chances.
It was the polar opposite to the return game, or the previous game, because that was 0-0, and it was absolutely dreadful. I remember sitting through it and thinking, God, this is terrible. But
whenever you get a load of goals in the first half, you never get any in the second half. Yeah.
No, I know. It's almost like the teams make a mutual pact to not keep up the intensity.
Yeah.
Apart from sometimes when you do.
Very rarely.
We're like when Germany beat Brazil, famously, of course. Mm.
Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah, but that was very one-sided. Yeah, well, I'm saying help. I would have rather this end up sort of 5-4 or something.
Yeah. Oh, we all would.
But 3-2 still. It was a good game.
Did you hear on the commentary, and I did look this up, and it does appear to be true, that Wilfred Zaha has started all but 10 Premier League games this season, and the 10 he hasn't started, they've lost every single one of them.
That's right. He is so crucial for them.
I love Zaha because he always looks surprised.
He does.
I mean, always. Yeah. I think it might just be the shape of his face.
I think it's... He's a brilliant player. I mean, the trickery and the skill, but the difference is, like, I'm sure Palace fans would say, you know, go to watch them week in, week out, that he'll probably try a few tricks and they don't pull off. But a lot of the times, what he does is effective. You know, I mean, that's obviously shown by his goals there. But he's, I don't know whether is it Hodgson that's done this maybe, or just his own awareness of growing up in the football world. But he looks a little bit more functional as well as the flair type player. I mean, look at that header he scored. Getting on the end of that was a great goal.
Has Hodgson done this? Has Hodgson done this?
Right, is this Roy's doing?
He's a direct player playing in a simple.
But he's also a wire player by trade. But he's played a lot through the middle this season.
Yes.
And what you sometimes get with wide players, a criticism that's levelled at them all the time, is that they don't consistently take responsibility. Mm. It's the easiest thing in the world to not tuck in when you haven't got the ball, to not work back, to get yourself out with chalk on your boots and not really take responsibility. But Zaha takes responsibility. He carries the ball really well. He makes the right decision more often than not for a player of that type. And as Crystal Palace fans may disagree with me, I think they'd have a brass neck to disagree with me because he's by far their best player and essentially the sole reason they're going to stay in the Premier League this season. He's been able to play in a sort of variety of different positions as well here and there. You could arguably say that he is the most important player to a team in the Premier League. Certainly easily in the bottom half.
Milivojevic might not agree with you.
He's important as well, but what I'm saying is,
if you take
Mo Salah out of Liverpool, or Kevin De Bruyne out of City, or Kane,
Mark Noble out of West Ham,
Kane out of Spurs, they've still got loads of other really good players. Yeah. And with respect to Palace, Zaha is by far and away their best player. Now, I understand Milivojevic has been really important for them, scored about 400 really important penalties, and missed a really key one.
But he controls that the way he plays. He provides a platform. I mean, obviously not just him, the rest of the side, but he controls that midfield.
Sure.
But you say he chips in with goals, he creates. He's a really...
But I'm saying Zaha's brilliant. I'm not saying Milivojevic isn't.
Sure,
brilliant.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Well, they're both brilliant.
Yeah.
Both players are brilliant for Palace.
So Brighton have got a stinking run.
Well, isn't it?
I mean, Brighton, they have 35 points. Now, Palace have 34, and there's some teams down there have played a game less than Palace. But you would expect them to start. They have a more preferable run in. But Brighton, as you say, I mean, just to remind everybody,
they've got Spurs, they've got Burnley away, they've got Man United, Man City, and Liverpool.
Exactly, yes.
That is awful.
They are essentially hoping that the other sides below them don't get results. I mean, Huddersfield got a brilliant win.
Did I hear a Man United in that list?
Yeah, Man United at home is fine.
That'll be all right.
That's the three points they'll be targeting to keep them in the Premier League.
Genuinely, given how bad Southampton are, though, they might be fine if they lose all of those games.
Well, I mean,
Man United are, Marcus, are just a very generous team. They're just dishing out things that mean things to other people. I mean, you dish out 3 points to Brighton, so they stand in the Premier League. Thanks very much, Man United. Again, no problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the time of recording, West Ham haven't played Stoke City. But, you know, at most, Stoke would be on 30 points. I mean, Brighton, you would think at 35 points at this stage, I mean, Southampton, they've got 5 games left. You know, you sort of guesswork now. But you would expect a one win from Brighton, that would do it, I think. But Zaha said himself, quite boldly, we just need one more win. And I thought, well, that would take them up to 37 points. You'd think that they would get a win.
I'm enjoying this from him and from David Wagner. Just, it'll be fine. There's newfound confidence.
I think 37 is going to keep them in the Premier League. There's a 5-point gap already.
Mm.
And, you know, I understand a couple of the teams below Palace have got a game extra to play. But the point is, as we said over and over again, these teams down there, they don't win games.
No.
That's why they're down there. So I'm not worried that Stoke have got a game in hand. I mean, if there's any team that you want to be unworried about them having a game in hand, Stoke would be up there. So the reason these teams need to progress at a points per game ratio far in excess of what they've done so far this season to trouble a team like Palace and West Ham, assuming they pick up at least one more win between them.
Yeah.
Only three teams can be relegated. You've got to remember
that. You have to remember.
Stoke are away to West Ham, so they are going to get Arnautovic. It's just going to happen. It's very, very true.
I'd very much like to relegate 7 teams this season. It's been some dreadful
stuff. Oh, Newcastle straight in the top half, and he starts giving it over 40 points.
Top, just 10. Top,
yeah,
10,
relegate, top, 10. Relegate the bottom half. Specifically today, though. Today.
What about that? Hey, Rafa said he couldn't have dreamt getting over 40 points with 5 games left. A top half finish is on the cards.
Four wins in a row.
It is remarkable.
Considering
what was going on. Well, what is still going on, but what was...
Everton are next. To be put to the sword, 5 in a row, thank you very much.
Sam Allardyce against his old side.
I saw some really emo Everton fans on Twitter this weekend saying it's the worst they can remember at Everton, based on the expectation they had, I suppose.
Right.
But Pete, the pressing question I've got for you here isn't about Jonjo Shelvey.
It just won't go away, will it?
It won't go away.
This England talk, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was particularly...
No, hang on a minute. It wasn't about Jonjo Shelvey. I'm not finished. My question was going to be, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, why does it repeatedly say flannels around the pitch at St James's Park?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, they've got...
Show at thefootballramble.com if you do
flannels.
Know.
Flannels.
Oh,
if you're some sort of insult to Sunderland fans, some kind of coded thing.
If you're the marketing executive for flannels, let us know.
Yeah, there we are. Great win for Newcastle, though.
It's an excellent win. Arsenal were dreadful.
Yeah, but they were there.
What is Mustafi nowadays?
Oh, God.
Why must Arsene Wenger ruin players?
I think... Mustafi
why must he do that?
Mustafi seems to have based his entire game around Per Mertesacker's turning circle, which is not not something you should look at and want to, do yourself, is it, really? It's interesting, because it's, as you say, Arsenal were dreadful. At first half, I thought... Actually played fairly well. The heads didn't drop when Newcastle scored, which has been a huge sign of Arsenal on the road. But then they only lost 2-1. Exactly, only lost 2-1. I'm so numb to it now. Having nothing to play for is enjoyable in a way.
They're going
to be rubbish, it doesn't matter.
In the first half, Arsenal did okay, right? They went in at 1-1. Iosi Perez, the predictable hero, scored.
Yeah. And then in the second half... outspent by Brighton and Huddersfield.
Yeah. So Mustafi made exactly the same mistake.
Can you use his full name, please, Jim?
Skodran Mustafi
tried to force a move to Inter when he didn't fancy it and cost £35 million. Skodran Mustafi,
who, according to Gary Neville, Valencia couldn't give him away, then Arsenal came along and bid £30 million.
I mean, that's Gary Neville.
He was there.
It was 35,
right? Bid 30 million. Put it up before they reply.
The big question is, of course, that can Arsenal keep sixth place and keep Burnley in seventh? Can they hold off Burnley?
Well, if I can just finish that point about Mustafi, it's that he made exactly the same mistake against Perez that he did against Shane Long the week before. It's just, just not learning, just and really basic responsibilities just being left to other people.
And Pete's point is really pretty accurate about we don't want to hit on hate on Wenger too much. Well, I'm going to tell you the point about Wenger sort of, you said ruining players, but you have to understand, Mustafi started his career at Arsenal very well. I mean, they went through a period of a lot of games unbeaten with him starting. I think he broke the record at the time. And he's just gone backwards since then. He is completely bereft.
Because
now
there will be no consequences for that, for him making those really, really basic errors two games in a row. And he knows that. We've been through this so many times, etc. I mean, I'm sure in that podcast where I was banging on about Shamak, we probably touched on this about 3 weeks later, But Burnley absolutely can catch Arsenal now. That's the thing. You feel like,
that's mad,
it's the away form, isn't it? It's the away form. Still got to go to Old Trafford, which it would be hilarious if Arsenal won there. But
they won't.
Yeah, well, that's it. There's the away form just haven't picked up a point in 2018 on the road.
Yeah, it's the only team in the country to do that. Not do that. Sorry.
I think it's the first time we finished a game in the Premier League at home with an Islam and a Mohammed.
Is that right?
But no Jesus Gomez.
Oh, that's a shame.
He was the previous
could
day.
Could have been all of them.
That would have been brilliant.
I've been very patient. Jonjo Shelvey.
Yeah, you have been patient, to be fair.
You've only crowbarred him in once.
In many ways, it's the perfect game for Shelvey, where he gets a lot of time to do what he wants. But Elneny was actually quite good in Europe and was all over the place. Yeah, he didn't seem to be able to apply himself to Shelvey in this game. But he played well, Shelvey.
He's not
someone you can rely upon. That's the problem.
I think the problem is that Southgate. Well, not the problem. I think the thing is Southgate has his system. He's been working on that for probably about a year now with England, or maybe slightly
less. It's not just about Southgate, Pete. Sorry, it's about, you have to understand what's expected of a player like Shelvey at a club like Newcastle. With respect to them, Newcastle aren't expected to perform and win every single game. Mm. Benitez specifically targets games he thinks he's going to win.
Of course.
And Shelvey stands out in some of those games. But when he goes to a club like Liverpool, I understand he's a lot more mature now, a lot more experienced. But when he goes to a club like Liverpool, the scrutiny is too much for him.
I do think he's an excellent performer going forward. But as I said, if you watch him, even against Arsenal, when, there were players, it would be very easy to put a foot in and some challenges. And he just backs off and backs off most of the time.
Has he benefited from Mo Diame's improved?
Well, exactly. That's the thing. We're getting performances out of people like Paul Dummett, performances like Mo Diame. And that's where Rafa's managerial skills come in, because he's turned Mo Diame into an absolute plodder of a footballer, into one of the most hardest working players on the pitch. I think he ran more than every other Newcastle player, which he should do in that position. But yeah. he was a bit of a lollopping mess when he first started. Well, he would always come in late. He would always kind of like.
But Pete, there was talk that Benitez got him a personal trainer,
yeah,
to work on his fitness,
yeah,
and it seems to have paid dividends. And that's going to help Shelvey, isn't it?
I think if the World Cup was in a year's time, and Shelvey had another season under Benitez, because Benitez, you know, he does like his tactics and his strategies and so on. And if Shelvey could show another season of following that, then maybe. But I think the problem for Shelvey is that Southgate has his system. He has a way of playing. And I don't think Shelvey necessarily fits into that. And as you say, it's probably become, because it wasn't that long ago at Bournemouth when Newcastle drew 2-2 and people were suggesting that Shelvey was a little bit out of position and blah, blah, blah. So I wouldn't be shocked if he was included in the squad, but I don't think he's featuring heavily in Southgate's players.
I would be massively shocked if he was included in the squad. Yeah, it should be a wasted place. He'd never get used.
There we are.
Yeah, it's true. He wouldn't play.
Let's move on to the Championship, gentlemen. Wolves beat Birmingham 2-0 to take them a step closer to the title, but they gained promotion. So it's a big old party down at Molineux. They're back.
Yeah.
And relegation, it looms. Well, when I say looms for Birmingham, they're not in the relegation.
It's another seat. Well, at least they're without Redknapp's
legacy.
Yeah. I mean, they might be okay. They were actually, I mean, the start of the game against Wolves, I watched a good part of it. They were a little bit unlucky at the start. John Ruddy made an amazing double save. Yeah. It was one of the double saves of the season.
Class. Birmingham had man sent off.
They did, and that was an unfortunate situation because Morrison made that error and Harley Dean had to just stop the striker. And the referee, I mean, the referee could have used a bit of leniency, yeah, to give him a yellow. He was quite far out, but obviously he gave him a red. But on the Wolves thing, they deserve an immense amount of credit for being promoted. They've been fantastic. I'm not a huge fan of this arrangement they've got with Georgie Mendes.
Neither is the Premier League or some of the clubs. There is a little concern, isn't there?
Right. But you know, Wolves are, you know, they're a big club and it'll be good to see them back in the Premier League. It's for others to work out whether they've done what they've done is fine and the other Premier League clubs will accept it. I'm sure they will. They're a big club and it's good to see them back in the Premier League, I think.
Yeah, and Cardiff are in second because Fulham, oh, they were pegged back by Brentford in the 94th minute. Brentford equalised, and that's really helped Warnock. That really has. Cardiff now back in pole position for that automatic promotion place, because they would be gutted. They would be... I think Fulham and Cardiff, the reason why that battle... Well, there's the obvious reason, because it's an automatic place. But Cardiff, having been in the automatic places for so long, if they drop down into the playoffs just at the end...
It's harsh, that'd be hard
that would be really hard for them to pick themselves up. Fulham, after the run they've gone on, for them to be just in the playoffs, again, might be a difficult one. And often we see the team who finishes third don't go up.
Well, Fulham away to Millwall next. That was a really tough game because they've been excellent.
Millwall are in sixth. I mean, considering the off-field stuff and where they were going to end up playing football and so on with Millwall, they've had a remarkable season. They're very much in the playoff fight and so well done to them.
Also, Ryan Sessegnon absolutely swept the board in the EFL Awards, didn't he?
Yeah.
He won Championship Player of the Season, Young Player of the Year.
Well, he's just a brilliant player.
Best Apprentice of the Year.
It's an interesting season. It's an interesting one for Fulham, because if they don't go up, you might think that Sessegnon certainly would move on.
Well, he said he wants to play Premier League football, doesn't
he? Yeah, maybe Tom Kearney. Would Mitrovic fancy staying around? You know, really, they would lose some crucial players. Even the manager, Jukanovic, who could operate in the Premier League.
Yeah, they're in a moment. You've got to try and make the most of it.
Certainly, man. Certainly. Right, we're going to talk about the Scottish Cup, ladies and gentlemen, after this.
Muy rápido, muy, muy, like a Ferrari.
The preview show, ladies and gentlemen, sponsored by Bet365, is happening this Thursday. How did our courageous better get on, Luke?
I've kept pretty quiet up till now. A lot of people on Twitter when Southampton went 2-0 up, but Edward Gibson, he pulled it off. He turned it around.
Didn't he? Yeah. Good boy, Gibby.
Raised a good amount of money for Prostate Cancer UK, so he's still in the hot seat. Could we get a hat trick this late in the season?
Oh, it would be lovely,
well,
wouldn't it?
Find out if there goes a second rung on the ladder on Thursday.
Just relieved that one's come in.
Look out for it. We're all under a bit of pressure. I was thinking to myself, what am I going to do if this one doesn't come in? I might have to take the mantle on myself, show a bit of leadership, but he's done it for us, so good luck to him. Another bet from him on Thursday.
Damn right. And the Scottish Cup semi-finals happened. 4-0 and 3-0. Not really keenly contested affairs, although Aberdeen might disagree. But yeah, Rangers, they got an absolute roasting from Brendan Rodgers' side. They reached the final with ease. I mean, he's loving it, old Rodgers, isn't he? They're just dicking all over their big rivals.
Yeah, Tom Rogic has scored in every Old Firm derby this season.
He's been absolutely fantastic.
Probably about 40 of them as well.
Yeah, exactly. Did you see that one of the national newspapers was suggesting that Brendan Rodgers is in a shortlist for the Chelsea job when Conte eventually goes?
I've heard he's been linked I've heard him linked credibly with big Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
Not just Chelsea.
Arsenal.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've heard him linked with many clubs. Honestly,
when
I have.
You look at the way that people, you know, legends like Jose Mourinho, how hard he's found Manchester United, does Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool legacy seem not as bad?
Well, he did okay. And I think, by the way, we talked about Rodgers in the past. I think the thing Rodgers has got going for him, of course, at a certain level, he's fantastic and he knows what he's doing and he's obviously a good coach. But he's intelligent enough to not alienate other people in football. Mm. But
well, he's basically a chilled out entertainer.
But he's not. So, yeah, but the thing is, Jim, I think that actually works. That does work in football. I think there are a lot. You're right, Pete.
Yeah. Just dropping stuff.
He's fuming about Rodgers. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see him go back to the Premier League, a big Premier League job in the near future. He said he wants to stick around and do this, achieve all these things at Celtic. But he understands, with respect to Scotland, it's not at the forefront. It's not in the vanguard of the best quality football. And so he understands his shelf life is going to be okay for a period of time.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you get too much success in a place like Scotland, people go, oh, it's just Scotland. You know, it's easy.
But he could spin that and say he's at a club who are expected to win. Now, I know, you know, even Ronnie Deeler won the title there, but actually there is a way of winning it in better fashion, playing better
football. Well, it's about dominating.
Yeah, and Rodgers definitely has brought that to Celtic. But he's at a club where they are expected to win every week and they have a winning mentality, an enormous club with a fantastic tradition, huge supportership, you know, that kind of thing. There is a bit of pressure there. Mm. And so that is pretty good to have under your belt, you know, and then you can go off and try and bring that winning mentality to wherever
Sure, but what, I guess what I'm trying to say, and I maybe didn't articulate myself properly, is if you're up there for too long and people just see it as business as usual, you just get forgotten about.
Yeah.
And it's not going to keep generating headlines.
It's a shame that they've not had a good go at the Champions League. They've been unlucky with the
tough
draws,
group,
but they have been absolutely hammered.
Yeah, but I mean, that's
hammered.
A big ask, though.
It is, but Martin O'Neill, when he was there, for example, did okay in the Champions League. You know, tough groups, but getting beat 6 and 7, you know, is not what you want. But they're in the Scottish Cup final, along with Motherwell beating Aberdeen. The Well are in the final.
The Well got one over on the Dandies, didn't they?
The Tick versus the Well in the final.
Yeah.
Celtic will win. Jim, won't they? Let's be honest.
They will. They're going to do a double treble, aren't they?
A double treble. So there we are. Well done, Brendan Rodgers, once again. Okay. There we are.
Breath of fresh air.
Indeed, yeah. We come towards the end of the show. Now, just a little notice that Going for Gold has been moved to Thursday's show.
Mm. Yeah. To make way for the following.
Yeah. A new podcast feature.
Here we go.
Oh, do you need a jingle for it?
Go on, Peter.
New podcast feature.
Excellent jingle. Yes, welcome to our new feature brought to you by LG OLED TV. See it, hear it, feel it. Live the game with LG, proud sponsors of the FA and the England men's teams. Now, ahead of the World Cup for the next 8 weeks, we will be reliving an iconic England moment every Monday. Today's has been chosen by us, but in subsequent weeks, we will be asking for nominations from you, the listeners. Starting next week, we will discuss one of those listener-nominated England moments, with every chosen moment being entered into a competition to win a brand new LG TV. And the winner of the TV will be announced on the final show of the series on Monday, the 4th of June.
What about that, eh? Mm. An iconic England moment every Monday.
Yeah.
Right up. I wonder who's at the front of doing this feature.
Or Led Spelsy.
Are there enough England iconic moments? Well, tune in in the next 8 weeks and find out.
Yeah, so for this one, the first one, ahead of the listener-chosen ones from next week onwards, we have chosen Michael Owen announcing himself on the world stage, England v Argentina, in the second round of World Cup 1998.
Oh.
Do you know what? When I was thinking about this, I was thinking, has there been anything like this since then?
Wayne Rooney
would be the only one.
I suppose Wayne Rooney in 2004 is the only one. Yeah. Other than that, it's been quite slim pickings for exciting young players, exploding onto the world scene. Wayne Rooney's definitely one.
Yeah.
But Owen was absolutely incredible in that moment.
The manner of the moment was a lot more explosive than Rooney's, though, wasn't it? It was just, I still picture his massive shirt being slightly too big for him.
Back in the day when the shirts were big, and I need to stop you there, Jim. I need to nip this in the bud because Marcus just said the word Kieran, and I think he was going to say Kieran Dyer.
Was at Wembley for that World Cup or European Championship qualifier against Luxembourg when he was playing fullback, and it was pretty entertaining stuff.
Entertaining stuff. Kieran Dyer at fullback.
Iconic, you might say.
At the risk of Marcus derailing this completely, let's set the scene. So, England v Argentina in the second round.
World Cup 98 in France.
Yeah. Owen had. He played 5 minutes in the 2-0 win over Tunisia in the group, and he came on for 20 minutes and scored a nice poacher's goal in the 2-1 defeat to Romania.
And then hit the post. He did. With about a 25-yard.
And that game actually made us finish second in the group, which meant we would go on to play Argentina, of course.
Not a problem.
He started the game against Colombia, which we won 2-0, but he didn't score in that.
No.
Beckham got a nice free kick in that one, didn't he?
But we drew. Darren Anderton, lest we forget.
Indeed. In 1998, we then drew Argentina in the second round. And it was an explosive start to the game.
Well, that was, I mean, we talked about a game earlier in the Premier League, Palace versus Brighton, when it was a hectic first half. That, four goals in the opening, I don't know, 25 minutes or whatever. Oh, no, Argentina scored late on to.
They scored right at the end of the first half.
They did. But four goals in a first half of a knockout game in a World Cup.
Looking back on that game, it feels like, even now, looking back on it, it feels like it went on for about 5 hours.
It did, yeah. And we still lost.
The best game,
that moment, we still look back very fondly on. When Owen roasted the defenders after diving previously to get a penalty.
Do you remember the Batistuta's penalty to start the game off the first 5 minutes? Seaman almost saved it. He got really, really close to it, and it crept in. And then, obviously, Shearer got a penalty a few minutes later and made no mistake with that. There was no way that was being saved. But there was this feeling, if you guys remember, about Owen, because Argentina were pushing up and pushing up.
They were.
You thought, if we spring this lot, Owen is going to... His pace is absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what level of football you're at, and we hear this over and over again, it's a bit of a cliche, but it is absolutely true. Pace will absolutely kill you. It'll frighten you, and it'll make you worry to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do.
And directness as well. I think directness towards the goal. Not kind of like, I'm going to do a few step-overs in the corner. I'm going to run towards the goal now.
He does do that, and he goes past... so the ball comes across, and he goes past...
Ayala.
And he goes past Chameau first and then Ayala. But if you watch it again, the little shoulder drop.
Yeah.
The little shoulder drop before Ayala, who's an experienced defender, a good quality defender.
He takes it well wide.
Yeah, shuffles right, shoots left. I love that.
Yeah. Superb.
I think we knew at the time, though, this is going to be an iconic goal. That's what was so beautiful about it. You know, like this is going to be on the highlight reels forever.
Yeah.
We want something when you're watching England at a tournament that gets you out of your seat.
It makes you believe. Just
you that
for a
moment,
minute.
Gives you that moment. And he was wrong to take it off of Scholes' boot to finish it. Scholes probably gave him a talking to after that.
I'd have left that for Scholes.
What do you can you remember what your sort of your hopes for Owen were around that time? Because looking back on it, of course, he peaked so early in his career and demands on his body, and he subsequently said that you know, the expectation on him and the demands and the injuries, because his body was still growing and he doesn't feel like he was properly looked after as a young player. But in that moment, a star was absolutely born there.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter that England went out. It doesn't matter that the referee went into his back pocket for a red when he probably could have gone for a yellow. It looked quite harsh, even looking back on it now. It doesn't matter that England went out. Owen was a star was born in Owen then.
Mm.
And you could argue that he never fully... Well, he never did get to that exact level ever again.
No.
But do you remember at the time what your expectation was for him as a player at that moment?
Well, I thought he was going to be a world beater. And he had moments. I mean, he went on to play for Real Madrid, didn't feature too regularly, but still.
And other teams.
Yeah. That's from Man United as well.
He did stumble into the talent graveyard at that time.
The black and white vortex.
You know, went on to score a lot of goals for England. And it became... actually, I think sometimes we're a little bit disappointed because he didn't stamp his... authority might not be the right word, but he didn't make a huge impression on a tournament. But still, went on to score more goals at tournaments for England. And also became quite a regular... Well, he was a regular fixture in the side, but he was quite reliable scoring goals in qualification and so on.
Yeah. He seemed to relish international football more than he relished, probably because he had his best moments there.
Yeah,
he felt like an England player on loan to Newcastle.
He would refuse to play because he had an England match.
He got 40 England goals.
Yeah.
Quite. What I mean is the moment. The goals he scored are not open to question. He was a fantastic striker and all the rest of it. But...
Oh, I thought he was going to go on to be like not Batistuta, but you know, somebody who was going to be around.
He'd replace Shearer effectively.
Mm.
Yeah, it was like a changing of the guard sort of thing. But here's a hypothetical for you: then Argentina, of course, played Netherlands in the quarterfinal, didn't they?
That's right. Great game.
Could you have seen Owen having an impact on that game?
I could have done, but that game, I just think Dennis Bergkamp.
Yeah, true.
Let's not ruin it by thinking England might have been involved in that game. You know.
But anyway, I mean, look. that was a fantastic moment. I think the moment that rang true for us when we had to choose our one to kick everything off. We do want to hear from you for your moments, because what better way to experience more England moments this summer than if you aren't travelling to Russia, of course, than with an LG OLED TV and soundbar. To win, do email us in at competition@thefootballramble.com and let us know your favourite England moment, and we'll go through ours over the coming weeks and pick our favourite at the end.
There we are. So that was our first and latest, if you will, England moment, brought to you by LG OLED TV. See it, hear it, feel it. Live the game with LG, proud sponsors of the FA and the England men's teams.
I'm excited to see what comes up next week and the week
too.
After.
Hey, I tell you what, I'm getting a bit of World Cup fever, and I'll tell you why. Here's a quote for you, gentlemen. Who do you think says this?
Sven.
Is it John Joe Shelby?
They call me every day. They ask me how I am doing, but we need to take one step at a time. I repeat, if I feel well and I want to, I'll be there.
That's got to be Zlatan.
Correct.
Yeah.
Ibrahimovic on his possible participation at the World Cup.
Wow.
Part of me thinks that would be a real shame and a disgrace to the players who've helped them to qualify.
Yep.
And the other half of me thinks, I want to see him there.
He scored another goal out in California.
Yeah, he will do that.
In MLS, yeah. I mean,
oh, come on.
You know what I was talking about, Brendan Rodgers just making it de rigueur to win all the time. Zlatan's not going to be.
He's 36.
People are going to get bored of those headlines pretty quick.
Yeah. I love that. I repeat, if I feel well and if I want to, I'll be there.
Have you spoken to the manager, no?
Yeah. I forget who's in charge of Sweden, but do they have integrity?
Yeah.
Because that's ridiculous.
I look forward to the open...
This side beat Italy in a playoff.
Marcus, I look forward to the really awkward opening team meeting when they arrive in Russia, where there's the requisite amount of players and Zlatan, and they have to have a discussion about who goes home.
Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. That is the end of the Football Ramble. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on Thursday, of course, with the preview show.
Yeah, don't forget, if you want a chance to win a new LG TV, email into competition@thefootballramble.com and let us know your favourite England moment. We'll be selecting ours week to week, and at the end of that, on the 4th of June, someone will win.
There we are. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jim Edward Campbell.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Peter.
See you later, Marcus.
Bye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.